This is Lee Habib with Our American Stories. Every other week, we bring you a feature called Women Who Dare with author and journalist Gail Sheehy. Gail has written 17 books. Her earliest revolutionary book, Passages, was named by the Library of Congress as one of the 10 most influential books of all time. Gail is one of the original contributors to New York Magazine and has been a contributing editor of Vanity Fair since 1984. Her latest book, Daring, a memoir, Gail focuses a lens on her own passages, and she has founded an exciting new online initiative, the Sheehy Daring Project. That's www.sheehydaringproject.com. And in this week's Women Who Dare feature, Gail speaks to a young woman who was raped, and the justice system, well, it failed her. This young woman has since dared to take her experience and fight for that very system's reform in her own community and communities across our nation. Here's Gail.
We have a story tonight about the rape of Megan Ebos, then a 16-year-old girl, and how she has dared to reform an indifferent justice system in her city of Memphis. Megan, 9 years after your attack, you saw a report on TV of yet another rape in your community, and it stirred up a painful memory inside of you. What was it?
Well, I thought that MPD was finally investigating the case of a serial rapist in my area, and I wondered if it was the same man who had attacked me 9 years ago.
And how uncomfortable was it to call the police to see if your case was connected to what they were investigating?
Well, it was very uncomfortable. The only way I had been able to function in my life for all those years with my rapist on the loose was to go into denial. So making the decision to call the police that day was definitely hard.
I can imagine. It must have brought you right back to that terrible afternoon when you just gotten home from high school and was maybe just a half an hour before your mother would get home from work. And what happened?
Yes, well, that day I came home from school, and when I bent down to let our dog out of her cage, someone ran up from behind me, pushed me to the floor, covered my face, held a knife to my throat, and said, "Stop screaming. If you see me, I'll kill you."
Oh, wow. And did you stop screaming and maybe try to humor him like many victims do?
I think I did stop screaming, and I remember offering him a glass of tea. But he dragged
anything
me
you
to,
could do, anything you could yeah. do to make him not kill you.
Yeah, anything I could do to stay alive.
Naturally. But he dragged you into another room, didn't he?
Yes, and he covered my face and he raped me at knife point.
With a towel over your face so you couldn't see him.
Yes.
How many years did it take then, and how many other victims, before the serial rapist, his name was Anthony Aliano, was finally arrested and charged?
It was 9 years before police properly investigated my case, and at least 8 more victims after mine.
Isn't that disgraceful? All in your same small suburb of Memphis?
All in the same small suburb.
Cordova?
Cordova.
So what happened when you did go to the police almost a decade later and you told them you believed your rapist might have also been the man behind the most recent attack?
They didn't give me very much information at all, but they said that they would look into it.
How often did you call them?
Well, I was pretty anxious about them forgetting about my case again, so
right.
I persistently called them. It felt like I was calling them every other day.
Did they finally test your rape kit and get his DNA?
Apparently they did. And on my birthday, June 21st, 2012, I called MPD and they told me that a match had been made to this rapist in my rape kit.
So that the implication was they'd never tested it before then?
Yes.
So what action did you take?
well, Since I was still struggling with having so little information about how this case was handled, I started asking the police and the DA's office questions, and they actually told me that it was their policy not to test rape kits in unknown suspect cases. And I kept digging and organizing with some people in the community, and a few months later, the city revealed that they had 12,000 untested rape kits.
12,000. I think 12,384, to make it specific.
Yes.
Untested. And they called it a backlog. Why did they admit to this?
I think that they wanted to get out in front of the issue, so they had a press conference announcing this situation to make it look like they had it under control.
Mm-hmm. But in fact, those samples and thousands of untested kits might take 5 years, and they said more than $6 million to process. And then the city had an excuse. They said they didn't have the funds for it.
Yes, but unfortunately, it's clear that they did have the funds, and the federal government pays these costs. The city of Memphis just chose not to use the money over the years.
Well, any local law enforcement agency doesn't have to pay to test DNA evidence out of their own pocket, right? Because the federal government offers them money for that very purpose.
That's correct.
What do you believe is the real reason, then, they didn't test your rape kit and so many others?
Well, I think that it was to protect Memphis's reputation, or I should say to prevent Memphis's reputation from being worse, because they already had a bad reputation for being a crime-ridden city, and rape cases, unfortunately, are easy to ignore, easy to bury, easy to manipulate the crime statistics for your city about.
This is Lee Habib. More of this harrowing story, Gail Sheehy, Women Who Dare, with Megan Ebos. We'll be back after this. This is Lee Habib, and this is Our American Stories. And we're in the middle of a harrowing story of Megan Ebos. And Megan had been raped as a 16-year-old and saw her rapist on television, confronted the bureaucracy that is the Memphis Police Department, and it turned out there were over 12,000 backlogged rape test kits. Just disgraceful. And Gail Sheehy, who joins us every other week with her daring project and digging into the lives of women who dare to do remarkable things, caught up with Megan, and we continue their conversation right now.
Did you find out there were other cities around the country that want to decriminalize rape and take the spotlight off them as possibly ignoring this crime?
I later found out that precedent existed in Atlanta, Baltimore, and St. Louis for burying thousands of rape cases so that crime statistics would look better.
So they just throw them into a cardboard box and stick them in storage and ignore them?
I'm not sure where exactly all of them were unearthed from, but essentially, yes.
Well, that really alienated you, and I think it got you to the point of suing the city of Memphis.
Yes.
Did you do it on your own, or did you have any other victims from the same rapist?
We've initiated a class action lawsuit against the city of Memphis, including at least three other victims of our same rapist. And at this point, there are over 30 additional rape victims who have joined on as plaintiffs.
So your daring brought 29 other women forward who'd probably been living with the same shame and guilt and PTSD that you had. That's a bold step.
Yes.
But, you know,
yes.
You told me you went to law school, and you were only 2 years out of law school. Maybe this crime and the mishandling of it drove you to go to law school. Is Memphis now...
I think so.
You do?
I do. I think that the experience of being raped and then reporting it to the police and the police actually threatening to arrest me and the lack of justice just made me so confused in my worldview that I was desperate for any kind of answers and understanding, and so going to law school served that purpose.
And what did they threaten with you? How did they threaten you with possible arrest yourself?
So they accused me of lying from the get-go. And so they said repeatedly when they were interviewing me about my rape, they said, well, you know you can go to jail if you're lying about this, right? You're not just doing this for attention, right? Just things like that.
I've heard that from many other women. But now that they're finally going back and testing this evidence, have they issued many indictments? And what for?
They've issued over 100 indictments for aggravated rape.
That's a mm-hmm. That's a lot of crimes that have just gone under the rug. They got DNA matches with 90 men, and out of them, 31 mm-hmm. are suspected serial rapists. 31 are suspected serial rapists. Just imagine that many women suffering in silence and shame with crimes that were never looked into at all.
Absolutely. And many of these women did not know who their rapist was or what he looked like, so they had no way of protecting themselves from their attackers over the years.
And probably were, you know, walking around afraid that there would be a repeat of the crime.
Absolutely, and probably in denial like myself.
How were the police able to unearth such a treasure trove of evidence?
In many states, Tennessee included, arrestees for violent offenses and people who have been convicted for many criminal offenses get their DNA sample collected, and then that is put into the national database called CODIS. So when they finally do test these rape kits, they are getting a lot of matches for people who have been prosecuted for non-rape crimes. And that's
so
where many of the matches are coming from.
That DNA database is enormously important in being able to track down these serial rapists. Well, Megan, you've become a national spokeswoman for demanding that cities clear their backlogs on testing rape kits. Tell us what you've been able to accomplish.
Well, I have most importantly changed, or I've gotten the statute of limitations removed in the state of Tennessee for the crime of rape. Until 2014, Tennessee actually had a statute of limitations of either 8 or 15 years.
And that would have kept your crime out of danger for the rapist, right?
Well, in Tennessee, rape is not actually the most serious level of offense. Aggravated rape is, meaning a weapon was used. So in my case, a knife was used, but if the prosecution hadn't felt that they could prove that a knife was used, my case would have been indicted as a rape, and by the time my rape kit was tested by police, it would have been 1 year too late to prosecute my case.
So how did you make it happen quickly?
I organized with people in the community and tried to expose this problem in which victims are reporting their attacks, and then by no fault of their own, the police are delaying the use of the evidence. Meanwhile, the statute of limitations ticks on.
And so you have had the statute of limitations removed in the case of rape?
Yes.
That's a major accomplishment because, as you say, so many people wait years before they can bear to admit and go through the legal process.
And Well, even more egregious, though, the police will wait years before even trying to use the evidence and solve the case.
Right. You started an organization to help victims seek help without fear of intimidation. Tell us about it.
Yes, the organization is called People for the Enforcement of Rape Laws, and our website is enforcerapelaws.org. We will help connect people with information about their rights, and if appropriate, help them find legal representation.
What's the acronym for your organization?
PERL.
P-E-R-L.
P-E-R-L.
Megan, I hope you're an inspiration to other female victims of rape, and urging them to dare to come forward and tell their stories. And if they're ignored, they can contact PERL for help in holding law enforcement accountable for prosecuting this crime.
I hope so. We have helped over 50 individuals already, and we've only been in existence for about 6 months.
6 months, 50 victims. That's a great score. You have a great deal to be proud of, and I hope people are listening and will pass on this information to anyone they know who is hiding this crime and suffering from it in silence. Thank you, Megan.
And what a piece of work Megan Ebos accomplished. I mean, getting a law changed at the age of 23, we were just commenting, listening as a group. Just great work. And Gail Sheehy joins us now. Gail, thank you so much for this report. It's inspiring, actually. I mean, it starts off, as you can imagine, the audience is going, oh, my goodness. But what human beings can do, you only have a minute here, Gail. We're going to carry you over to the break. But what was your takeaway from meeting this young lady?
Well, I think what's important about Megan's story is what it took to galvanize her to step out front. You know, it's really hard when you've had a shameful experience to go to local media, to dare to give your name, to use your experience to expose the shocking lack of police protection and adjudication for such crimes. But she was so outraged to find that not only her rape kit was ignored for 9 years, and 8 more rapes were committed by the same man that had attacked her, but that there were hundreds of others that had been ignored.
Well, when we come back, Gail, we're going to dig a little bit more into this. We got 4 or 5 on the other side of the break. We're talking to Gail Sheehy, and the SheehyDaringProject.com is where you can go to post your stories. And this, I think, is one of my favorites, because a woman, a young woman, turns a tragedy into a victory, and in the end, saves a lot of other women's lives, too. This is Lee Habib. This is Our American Stories. More with Gail Sheehy after this. This is Lee Habib, and this is Our American Stories. And joining us again is Gail Sheehy, and the SheehyDaringProject.com is where you can submit your stories and your daring stories, if you're a woman, to Gail, and hopefully get them on our show. You know, Gail, I know I told you this earlier today, but we've actually hired Megan. She is such a remarkable young lady, and she is actually deeply interested in, Gail, the bureaucracies that fail kids. And she's going after inner-city school bureaucracies, prison bureaucracies, and she really has a thing for the VA. So isn't this interesting that social justice, and I would call her a libertarian, the left and the right are in almost a convergence here about some of these bureaucracies and the way they're failing so many countless numbers of folks.
Absolutely. And, you know, what Megan exposed was that not only Memphis, but many other cities, including Philadelphia, St. Louis, Atlanta, have ignored these rape kits, which to produce a rape kit is a very painful experience for women who have just recently been defiled. And many of them don't even do it because it's almost like being raped again. But having gone through that ordeal, then to have them ignored when there's a national database of DNA, and it's very easy and common to be able to make a match with DNA of people who have been arrested for other crimes, but then also have rape, and their DNA matches up, and then they can be prosecuted. So she exposed the real reason that many cities, particularly high-crime cities, ignore these rape kits, because, as she says, they don't want to give the city a bad rep for the kind of crime that is going unsolved and not even investigated. So the upshot of it is these women are walking around in the streets of their neighborhood scared for years at a time because they often don't see the face of their attacker. They cover their face with a ski mask or whatever, and they never know when it's going to happen again.
You bet. Well, Gail, thanks so much for bringing this story to our attention. It's so important. And what Megan told me is the agency and the power it brought her back, and that she was no longer a victim. And it wasn't just about social justice. It was most importantly about getting her life back, Gail. Thank you so much for doing this story, and have a great holiday season. We look forward to doing more of these the end of this year and next year coming.
Can't wait. Happy holidays.
Same here, Gail.